Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu. Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at mathworks.com.
From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. So, Californians have had their recall, and the governor-elect is populist, superstar, moderate Republican Arnold Schwarzenegger. Tonight on Point, a new macho movie star rules in Sacramento. We ask what it means for California, the GOP, and the country. We begin in Los Angeles, where the counting of recall votes is a technicality at this point. Earlier, I spoke with Susan Pincus, director of the Los Angeles Times poll, an exit survey of over 5,000 California voters. I asked her what the survey says about the inner workings of the California vote.
It shows that Governor Davis, or I should say former Governor Davis, could not get his base back to his camp. About a quarter of the Democrats were saying that they were voting yes on the recall. About 54% of the independents and about 55% of the moderates. So he never fully was able to get his core constituency back into his fold. When you look at the woman's vote, which was also another important demographic for him, he split the female vote, 51 to 49.
He split it on the question of the recall itself.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So it was 51% in favor of the recall, 49% against the recall. And men overwhelmingly supported the recall. He did, however, get back some of the union members that he was losing in our pre-election polling. He had about nearly 3 out of 5 union members saying that they were going to vote against the recall. But there was this sizable plurality, 44%, who were voting for the recall.
And what about the votes that went to Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger? Who was voting most heavily for Mr. Schwarzenegger?
Well, he did receive about 70% of the conservative vote. He received about 3/4 of the Republican vote. Most of his vote were white voters, about 81% were the Bustamante voters. It was a more culturally or ethnically diverse group. Interestingly, along with all the allegations swirling around him about problems groping females, etc., he did get the female vote, but not by much. It was 44% for Schwarzenegger and 35% for Bustamante. He got mostly all Republicans and conservatives, conservative Republicans. He actually rallied mostly everybody in any age group. He also rallied everybody in all different educational groups and income groups. And interestingly, also, he received about 48% of the vote overall. He received more votes than Governor Davis did when he was elected in 2002.
That's something to think about. On the gender line, what about the on the male side of the gender line? How did Arnold Schwarzenegger do?
He had 52% of the male vote, while Bustamante had 29% of the male vote.
What about motivations for the way people voted? When you ask people if they voted to recall Gray Davis, why they cast that vote, what did they say?
They really regurgitated back what was in the ads, his mismanagement of his office, the energy crisis, the budget crisis. They felt that he was too beholden to special interests, and they did not feel he was an honorable man. If they were voting against the recall, most of it was about process. They felt that the election in 2002 was fair and he shouldn't be recalled, that even though he's unpopular, he shouldn't be recalled, and that they felt that the GOP just wanted to take control of the governorship to push their own agenda. And they thought the recall was a ridiculous thing to happen.
Arnold Schwarzenegger comes across as fairly moderate on a number of social issues, abortion,
yes,
gay rights, and others. Was that reflected in your exit polling and the way people looked at him, supported him?
Yes, it did, as a matter of fact. 53% of the moderates supported Schwarzenegger, and about 34% of the non-liberal Democrats supported him. So he was getting a lot of the moderates, and he also got a lot of the independents. 46% of the independents said that they voted for Arnold Schwarzenegger. They also feel that he is the one to fix the problems that are before the state.
What numbers show up there?
It was 79% of the Schwarzenegger voters said that they voted for him because they felt that he could correct the problems of the state. In comparison to Bustamante, it was only 35% had the confidence that he could fix.
So overwhelmingly, the sense that the Hollywood actor had the stuff to fix whatever's wrong.
Right. And that was his campaign, basically. His campaign was to basically speak or address the moderates and to say that it's status quo versus change. And he was the candidate of change, that he was not beholden to special interests, saying that, look, I have all this money. I don't need anybody else's money. I am there for the people. And people took him at his word. And so we'll see what will happen in the next 3 years.
Well, they clearly want to change. When you asked how things are going in California, it wasn't a good response.
Oh, no. Almost three-quarters of the voters said that California was going in the bad direction. And they also said that our economy was doing very poorly.
As I'm looking at your numbers here, Schwarzenegger voters, 92% said that California was headed in the wrong direction.
Yes, and that's why they're voting for Schwarzenegger.
Well, now he'll get a chance to prove his stuff.
Right.
Susan Pincus, thanks very much for joining us.
You're quite welcome.
Susan Pincus is director of the LA Times poll. She spoke with us from Los Angeles. You can see full exit poll results at our website, onpointradio.org. It's a mouthful and still a bit of a mind bender, but get used to it. California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger. After 77 days of three-ring campaigning that was heavy on controversy and light on issues, the people of California have made their choice. A disastrous economy, anger at the incumbent, and a big-time Hollywood personality appear to have been key in the voting booth. Now, the real challenge for Arnold will be turning California around. But no matter what happens in the Golden State, the recall is a big, big moment. And today, everyone, from the citizens of California to the pundits in Washington to the White House and Democratic presidential challengers, is thinking through what it means. What lessons are you drawing from the great California recall? What does Arnold Schwarzenegger's win say about American politics and the 2004 presidential race? Is it good news for Republicans, bad news for incumbents? Does the win signal new momentum, a new profile for the GOP? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining us now from Los Angeles is Joel Averbach, professor of political science and policy studies and director of the Center for American Politics and Public Policy at the University of California, Los Angeles. Good evening and welcome, Professor Averbach.
Good evening.
Thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Also joining me from Los Angeles is Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Good evening and welcome, Bill Schneider.
I'm glad to be here.
It's great to have you. And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly Magazine. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guest. And hello, Bill Schneider.
Hello, Jack.
Everybody's here. Bill Schneider, a national snapshot first. Fast forward with us for a second to the Republican convention next summer, New York City. Where do you see Arnold Schwarzenegger sitting, standing, beaming, not beaming in the firmament of GOP power?
That is a very good question because of the controversy that has swirled around him in the last week of this campaign, and that is likely to continue because all of my friends and sources in the media here in California say these stories are going to continue. There are more allegations and charges that are likely to come out. And
that is the sexual offenses, the sexual misbehavior up and down.
That's right. Sexual misconduct and God knows what else is there. It could be financial. It could be anything. But he's now the governor. And any of these stories about a governor are fair game for the press. And the people in the press are telling me that they are doing investigations. What they'll turn up, we don't know yet.
So there's a lot of stories out
there.
So there's a lot of stories that are going to be coming out, and yet he's a big winner. He's just taken California. He's a huge personality. Will he be irresistible to the White House, or will he be eminently resistible? I mean, this is not the dream representative of George Bush's fundamentalist conservative base.
I'll tell you something. If a parade of women continues to come out making these sorts of accusations, and Schwarzenegger acknowledges that some of them are true, as he has in the past, I'm not sure President Bush wants to be seen with his arm around Arnold Schwarzenegger campaigning at campaign rallies and featuring him on the Republican convention platform. He becomes a very hot commodity and not exactly the image the Republican Party wants to project.
Joel Eberbach, how do you foresee the Arnold months ahead playing out in California? He's got terrible challenges in front of him there. He's come in very lustrous to this voting day. He's come out of it with a big win. He looks great in the pictures, you know, big smile. He's all Hollywood. Can even a superstar sustain that pose and that kind of energy given what he's up against in California?
Well, he's put himself into quite a box. He's promised to roll back the car tax. The state already has a budget shortfall for next year that people estimate between $8 and $10 billion. The car tax rollback, if he's successful in pushing that through, would add another $3 or $4 billion to it. And he basically managed in the campaign, which, of course, didn't last very long, to avoid answering any questions about what he would do. So my guess is that in the next few months, he's likely to disappoint a lot of the people who voted for him.
Can you make his challenge a little more real for us? We've heard about the $8 billion California deficit. I mean, that is huge. If he takes away the car tax revenues, another $4 billion, there's 12. He said in his press conference this afternoon the deficit may be $20 billion. He says he will roll back that tax. He will not implement new taxes. It's got to come from somewhere. Nobody believes it's all going to be from waste. And people say it means cutting programs like what, Joel Eberbach?
Well, if you look at the state budget, there's education, and the state funds a lot of education because of Proposition 13. A lot of the education revenues go to the counties and the cities. There are the prisons. There are the universities. There are the state parks. There's the Department of Motor Vehicles. I mean, there are a lot of things that the state does that are essential services in the state.
So if you had to close an $8 or $10 billion deficit and you had to take it out of programs, what's going to be shutting down? Where will the lights go off in California?
Well, that's an outstanding question. And I think the answer is that there's going to be immense pressure after the shouting dies down to raise taxes. And Schwarzenegger is going to have to deal with the Democrats in the legislature at that point. He made overtures to them last night, which I think was politically very smart.
Mm-hmm.
But it's quite possible that they'll sit back and say to him now, well, Governor Schwarzenegger, you suggest where the cut should come.
And Joel Eberbach, I know we only have you for another minute, so you tell us. We're going to hear more about this tonight. But what do you think the message from Arnold Schwarzenegger's election is to the country? How should the rest of the country take on board what's happened in California in the last 77 days, 24 hours?
Well, like Bill Schneider, I'm not sure entirely what to make of it. But if you're a celebrity in a situation like the one we had, it's an ideal situation for the man. He didn't have to run in the primary. He didn't have to take positions on any of the issues. He didn't have to appear in many situations where he could be asked questions in a manner in which he was forced to reply and such. So the overall significance of this is really very hard to tell. And that mixed with the challenges that Governor Schwarzenegger faces over the next year, I think it's very early to say that this is going to have huge ramifications. I mean, this man could be, you know, those of us who live here all hope that he's a huge success at this point, but he could be immensely unpopular by this time next year.
Jack Beatty, Joel Eberbach portrays it as a kind of superstar snatch and grab of the top seat there. What do you think, just on the face of it, big movie star takes big state, is this the degradation of American politics or just a populist uprising by Californians saying we need somebody to cut through the mess here?
Yes, you know, I think the words Gray Davis really matter here. I mean, this is a big vote for Arnold, but it wouldn't have been there but for the frustration with Davis. And when you unpack that and you begin to look at what was it that people didn't like about Davis. He was sort of the quintessence of all that's odious about our politics. The man was a money machine. I've talked to businessmen out there who said if you wanted to talk to him, your group had to make a contribution to his campaign, then he would talk to you. He kept shaking them down, shaking down the prison builders. And what did he do with that money? He spent it on tearing down other candidates. He was the king of negative campaigns and even spent $10 million in the Republican primary. I mean, on negative ads.
Right. So they were booing Gray Davis, but they were also cheering Arnold. Joel Eberbach, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Very welcome.
Joel Eberbach is at UCLA. We're talking tonight about the Schwarzenegger win and its implications for California and the country. Bill Schneider is with us. You can join, too. Is Schwarzenegger a sign of things to come? Like what? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Schwarzenegger win and its implications for California and the country. What lesson are you drawing from the California recall rumpus? Is Schwarzenegger a sign of things to come? And if he is, like what? And what does Arnold's win say about the 2004 presidential race? Is it good news for Republicans or bad news for incumbents? You can join us tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We're joined tonight by our own Jack Beatty and Bill Schneider, joining us from Los Angeles, senior political analyst for CNN. Bill, describe the energy out there, if you would, for us. Anger is the word that comes up. Frustration comes up. Now they've got Arnold. Do you feel, is there an optimism? Is it just the day after, you know, blush that's always there after an election? What's the feeling in the air?
I'd use two other words. One is excitement, and the other is empowerment. Mm-hmm. The people have overthrown their governor. They fired him.
When I was out
interviewing people in the street, they even weeks before the election, they said, you know, we hired this guy, and if he isn't doing his job, we have a right to fire him. Who's going to quarrel with that? And they feel empowered by doing precisely that.
So they've put the Terminator in office. Now, when you step back and look at this, if you were a Martian or something visiting from another planet, it looks odd. What's the feeling that somehow in his very simplicity may be an asset here to cut through the mumbo jumbo somehow? Or is this a popularity contest? Is it a desperation call?
Arnold Schwarzenegger has the appeal of an outsider. That's what Americans always go for when they're angry and they want change. They are angry, not just because it's a poor economy, but because they don't think Gray Davis had leadership skills. He didn't have vision. He didn't have conviction. He didn't have a direction for solving the state's problems. And they thought he lied to them when he got reelected last November by disguising what was then a $38 billion deficit. They thought he didn't show any leadership in the electricity crisis, which he handled very slowly and cautiously because he didn't want to offend anyone. And he ended up enraging the voters. What they see in Arnold Schwarzenegger are qualities of leadership. Why do they see that in this guy, this movie star? Well, look, he was a bodybuilder. The qualities that make a successful bodybuilder are focus, discipline, determination. He was an immigrant who came to this country very poor in the 1960s, and look at what he has made of himself. That story has impressed enormous numbers of Californians. They say the qualities that enabled him to get ahead in this country, to make a success of himself, those are the qualities we want to see in a leader. And those are the qualities they didn't see in Gray Davis.
So what's your sense of how those qualities that are demonstrated, that the proof is in the pudding in the private sector, in the movie world, in the pumping iron world, what's your assessment of how they will intersect with the realities that Governor-elect Schwarzenegger now has to face?
Well, he has no political experience, and that is, to the voters, great. This is the only position I know of, politics, where experience is a disqualification. People don't want experience. In fact, they penalize you for it. That's why there are such things as term limits, to throw experienced people out. That's the way the voters feel. Will he have the skills to deal with this? Look, he does have impressive intelligence, enormous focus, in a way similar to President Bush, who, when he decides to do a thing, becomes fairly stubborn and sometimes blinkered, doesn't let political criticism and opposition sway him. Look at Iraq. Look at his tax cuts. And he just goes ahead and does it. Those are the things they believe they see in Arnold Schwarzenegger. The difference is Schwarzenegger doesn't have any ideological views. He's not Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan was a true believer. It's hard to say that Schwarzenegger is a true believer in much of anything except probably himself. So we don't know what course of action he's likely to take.
Jack, how do you interpret this moment and this man, Arnold Schwarzenegger? Bill Schneider says, look, he's got the qualities of a leader. He's very much focused himself on that. He's even been quoted as saying that that's what one thing he admired in Adolf Hitler. He distances himself from that now. But how far can that go when the chips are down? Is that what it really boils down to? Or, you know, if you had said a year or two or three ago that Schwarzenegger would have been governor of the state, I think people would have looked at you cross-eyed. What do you make of the whole thing, Jack?
Well, I think one argument that's being made for it, and Bill has probably heard more about this than I have, is that the very fact that Californians have suddenly rediscovered politics, this has been a kind of, as Bill says, a popular movement out there. And suddenly the accidents and the chases and the stars were, or at least all but one star, were forced off the air. And you actually had the television, the local stations paying attention to politics. And you had a kind of citizen movement going on. So I think that this is out there, and he can take that energy, this is what he seems to be saying, and focus it on Sacramento. In other words, I can apply, he seems to be saying, a kind of Klieg-like politics on this inside game in Sacramento, which from reports is a case of ideological tong wars. The Democrats won't compromise on spending, the Republicans won't compromise on taxes, and you get a kind of logjam. And he seems to be saying, because of my star power, because the media is going to be following, and because I've got your mandate, I can focus on that, break up the inside game, and actually use this star power as a kind of political leverage. And, you know, that aside, he's going to give flash to an office that was awfully, how should one put it?
Gray.
You know, from George Duke Majan, Pete Wilson, mm-hmm. Gray Davis, these were very pallid characters. And, you know, the idea of publicity about George Duke Majan, what could it be? Whereas the candidate, suddenly California is going to have another star there. And what I'm afraid of, though, is that the great frustrations in California life could be exacerbated here. That is to say, the state's fall, really, since Proposition 13, in its quality of life. I mean, the decline in public services, such that Mississippi, our poorest state, is now routinely compared in point of spending on education, libraries, clinics, and so on, with our richest state, California. And any Californian who was young in the 1960s, when they had the best schools, the best services, more, a public works culture, has to feel tremendous frustration at the deterioration in public life there.
But they've got the fifth largest economy in the world, 54 electoral votes, and now, as you say, a Klieg-like quality star in the top seat. It's going to be something to watch. Bill Schneider, Jack, standby. I want to welcome into our conversation Adrian Wooldridge. He joins us from Maryland tonight. He covered the California recall for The Economist magazine. He's co-author of the forthcoming The Right Nation, How Conservatism Won. And he's been writing and thinking about the significance of an Arnold Schwarzenegger win for the GOP. Good evening and welcome, Adrian Wooldridge.
Good evening.
What's your thesis here? You are written just this last weekend in the New York Times that Arnold Schwarzenegger is a sign of a return to big tent Republicanism. Have we got that right?
Absolutely. My thesis is two things, really. Firstly, big tent Republicanism, that you can be all sorts of people and still be a Republican. And secondly, that there's a chance that we're seeing here the rebuckling of the Sun Belt. That what happened in the 90s was that the Sun Belt that brought Reagan to power was unbuckled. The Republican Party became a very southern party. The western wing of the party, the more libertarian wing of the party, which was based, for example, in California, was alienated from the Republican Party. And what Arnold might do is prove that you can be a libertarian, not a social conservative, but happily a Republican.
So where does Arnold differ from the Bible Belt Republican agenda here?
Where doesn't he?
Just up and down the line, you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely.
Abortion, gay rights?
I mean, I think that both sides agree that they're vaguely against the government. They're in favor of business, they're in favor of the market, they're in favor of small government, lighter taxes, lighter regulations. But I think they take very, very different conclusions from that anti-government philosophy in terms of morality. The Western Republicans really are leave us alone, free choice people, and that free choice extends to abortion, homosexuality, whatever. And the Bible Belt people combine a sort of pro-free market stance on economics with something which many people would regard as contradictory, which is a very authoritarian or traditionalist view on morality.
And they've been driving the Republican Party. So let's say you're right for a moment. We're going to test this thesis, but let's say you're right. What does it mean for the GOP if they rebuckle these two parts of the party that have been apart and take the more authoritarian, to use your word, a little bit out of the center of power?
Well, I mean, I think it could be enormously successful. I mean, Ronald Reagan was the person who managed to combine both of these elements and, of course, brought together an incredibly powerful coalition. But managing these two very disparate groups of people is, of course, an extraordinarily difficult thing, and you need to have political and personality gifts rather like Reagan's to be able to do that.
Bill Schneider, what do you make of the thesis that Arnold Schwarzenegger, in his more open social view, revives the sort of libertarian wing of the Republican Party and builds a big tent again? Do you buy it?
If he's successful, fine. It'll work. Ronald Reagan was a great success when he was governor, even though he didn't exactly follow an ideological program. Big secret, he raised taxes. He signed a liberalized abortion law. California is a very libertarian state. But all of it depends on whether Schwarzenegger is seen as a big success. I mean, one can make a calculation, though he could never be president. He could run for another term as governor, and then after that he could run for the United States Senate. He could develop a following. He could become a national figure. And he could lead the Republican Party in a new direction. John McCain is sort of the leader of that wing of Republicanism. He's the one who said in 2000, the Republican Party can't win as a conservative party. It has to be a reform party. Well, they did win as a conservative party, sort of, with George W. Bush. So they said, to hell with McCain. Well, now Schwarzenegger has positioned himself. You've got some pretty influential figures there, McCain, Schwarzenegger, who could point a new direction. But you know what? What matters in politics is winning. McCain didn't win. Schwarzenegger did win, and he has a chance to show himself as a champion. But he's got to continue winning.
Jack, I wonder, even if Arnold manages to somehow pull California's toes out of the fire here, he's still got that buzzsaw that's powerful in Washington. That's fundamentalist back. That's very right wing, authoritarian. Even do you really think, Jack, that even a successful Schwarzenegger can, you know, smoke the peace pipe with the wing of the Republican Party that's been very much in power and has a president that they're very much in line with?
Of course, the Republicans argue back about that. They say that the Democrats are the party of the small tent, that they're the orthodox party, that, you know, whereas the Republicans since 1980 have had two candidates, the first President Bush in 1980 and John McCain somewhat equivocally in 2000, who were pro-abortion rights, or at least some kind of it. It's unthinkable that the Democrats would ever nominate or even have in the primary a candidate who was not full square for abortion rights, so that the Republicans said it's you guys who have the orthodoxy, not us. On the other side, of course, you can see signs that the right is even going after sitting Republican senators. Arlen Specter in Pennsylvania has got a hard right challenger from a sitting congressman. Peter Fitzgerald in Illinois, I don't know the whole story there, but it sounds like he's retiring partly because he's going to have such strong conservative primary opposition if he didn't. The president intervened in the Minnesota race to get a more moderate candidate, Norm Coleman, to run against Paul Wellstone. But they haven't yet done it in Pennsylvania. And so there it looks like a big tent Republican, Arlen Specter, is a target of the small tent people.
Yeah, one wonders if Arnold grows the tent or incites a civil war inside whatever's there. And even if the Democrats, as you say, Jack, may have the tiny tent by comparison. I want to turn to Washington and Patrick Basham. He joins us from Washington, D.C. He's a senior political analyst at the Cato Institute. Good evening. Welcome, Patrick Basham.
Good evening.
What's your sense of Arnold's national impact on the GOP?
Well, it's all to be discovered, really. Arnold has campaigned vaguely and also campaigned in a way in which there was something for everyone, even if that something wasn't very detailed. If he does turn out to be something of a libertarian governor, then I think he will provide an attractive option for Republicans, and he will possibly, you know, flesh out this big tent Republicanism. If he, however, just turns out to be a sort of liberal Republican of the, you know, sort of an East Coast variety, sort of big government conservative, then it's not going to do much for the Republicans at all.
And if it were libertarian, we know you like that at the Cato Institute, do you think that could be a unified big tent, or is that a recipe for inter-party conflict in the GOP?
Well, it guarantees a certain amount of conflict. I mean, you know, as one of your other guests has said, I mean, the magician at this game was Ronald Reagan. And Arnold, or George Bush, whomever would be sort of in charge of this project, basically has to convince everyone involved that they can't get everything they want, but first and foremost, they need to win to get anything that they want. And so, as Reagan did, he has to persuade the social conservatives to hold their noses on certain issues, the more economic conservatives likewise, the libertarians likewise. Everyone has to buy into it. Very difficult to do, but possible with the right kind of leadership.
Well, they've got the first big win. We're looking at the implications of the Schwarzenegger win. You can join us, 1-800-423-8255. Brian's calling from Salem, Massachusetts. Hi, Brian. You're on the air.
Hello. I don't think that the impact of this election is going to be significant. I mean, Jesse Ventura certainly didn't have a
came and went and so what, right?
And I think the biggest change, actually, is just going to be a change in the political lexicon. Anytime somebody is challenging an incumbent, they're going to talk about recall him.
You're saying right in the middle of his term, let's just jump in and pull that politician out of there. Recall itself is the big impact.
Right. I think it's just going to change maybe some of the marketing approach of politics, if you will, that they're going to, a challenger is going to push on the recall thing, and if it's successful in California, if Schwarzenegger is successful, if by some measure, whatever that is going to be,
yep.
I think that people will be able to use that and say, okay, let's recall this guy.
And why wait for the term to end? Brian, we've got it. Bill Schneider, how about it? Do you see recall as becoming a cry taken up across the land, or is this a one-off thing in California?
Oh, I think voters around the country are sort of, their interest has been piqued by this, and they probably share the view of most Californians that it was a very empowering thing to do. But you know what? There is no state in this country that allows it to be done as easily as California. I mean, you have to have a very small proportion of signatures to get this on the ballot. A couple of $1 million, you got the signatures, you go on the ballot. It is a very strange law, and in other states, it just ain't that easy. Let me say something else about Arnold Schwarzenegger. I'll make an assertion.
Yeah.
I think if Arnold Schwarzenegger had to run in a Republican primary,
mm-hmm.
he would not have won. Look at what happened to Dick Reardon, a very Schwarzenegger-like Republican who ran last year with the blessing and encouragement of George Bush and the White House.
Carl Rove,
he
yes.
lost the primary to a conservative. I think the same thing might very well have happened to Arnold Schwarzenegger. He found this situation suddenly fell into his lap. He always wanted to be in politics. He wanted to be governor. And suddenly the recall was financed. It was an opportune way for him to get in without having to survive a primary. Brilliant. He did it. But he could never have gotten through a Republican primary.
He short-circuited that primary, and that opportunity doesn't come along that often. But now he sits on top of a very big state with a lot of electoral votes and a lot of challenges. Patrick Basham, what's your guess? Look a year out. Look at the presidential election next fall. Do you think that Arnold will be sitting up on the dais with President Bush at the Republican convention in New York?
I think he probably will be. And what Bush and Karl Rove and others will be trying to do is, being realistic, is not to win California, which is unlikely at this, you know, at this juncture, but rather to make California just a little more competitive so that, most importantly, the Democratic candidate spends time and money in that state, time and money he won't have that he really needs to be spending in the Midwest and more competitive parts of the country.
And that itself works for the GOP. Patrick Basham at the Cato Institute, thanks for joining us tonight.
You're welcome.
Bill Schneider, Adrian Wooldridge, Jack Beatty, please stand by. We're talking about the Schwarzenegger win and its implications for California and the country. Can Schwarzenegger deliver California for the GOP? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about the Schwarzenegger win in California and its implications for the Golden State and for the country. Our guest tonight, Bill Schneider, senior political analyst for CNN. Adrian Wooldridge covered the California recall for The Economist magazine, and our own Jack Beatty is with us tonight. You can join the conversation as well. What does Arnold's win say about the 2004 presidential race? Is it good news for Republicans or bad news for incumbents, maybe even the one in the White House? Is Arnold's win the launch of a big tent Republican Party more socially tolerant, or is this just a unique California face and circumstance of Republicanism? Do you expect to see Arnie and George Bush campaigning arm in arm in 2004? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Steve's calling from Boston. Hi, Steve. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I guess I wanted to come down on the side of suggesting that the real implication of this is on incumbents, not so much on the Democratic Party rather than the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. And I think what is driving that disaffection toward incumbents is the increasingly chaotic state of fiscal affairs at the state and local level. And I really think the White House has a blind spot on this. They don't realize that for most people's daily lives here in Massachusetts, for example, politics is about teachers being fired and about public services falling down and about, you know, electric grids that don't work. And I think this is creating a deep disaffection toward whoever the guys are that are in charge.
Got it, Steve. Loud and clear. And let us pick that up. Thanks for your call. Bill Schneider, I want to go back to something you said off of what Steve's saying here. California voters, very angry today, feeling very empowered through Arnold Schwarzenegger, who conveys, perhaps in the way that only a movie star can, in a pumped up, super macho movie star, these qualities of leadership. Is there something about fiscal chaos that makes people put those qualities of leadership above the particular answers? Schwarzenegger didn't come out with a detailed program for what he was going to do. And if that's the case, I mean, is leadership a substitute? And the theater of leadership, is it a substitute for a detailed platform? Or is it a way of, you know, ducking an impossible situation?
Well, yes. People, this had nothing to do with ideology, and it had certainly nothing to do with issues. By 2-1, the voters said he didn't have specific positions on the issues. What they have confidence in is that he'll be able to shake things up. That's what he promised to do. That's all he promised to do. How he's going to do it, what he's going to do. The voters said, look, we trust you. We'll give you a chance. We'll let you know if you're doing the right thing. Schwarzenegger's message was very straightforward. It was exactly what Steve just said. His message was, mm-hmm. Times are tough. Voters want change. Outsiders are in. That is not a good message for President Bush, because he's the ultimate insider. The outsiders in the presidential race are right now most prominently the former governor of Vermont, Howard Dean, and a retired general who, like Arnold Schwarzenegger, has no political experience named Wesley Clark. Those are the true outsiders.
Jack, I wonder on this front. I mean, at one level, it's I'm the outsider. On the other, on another level, it's I'm the muscle man, the leader, the man high in the saddle. George Bush broadcasts a bit of this himself with his persona. He pumps his own iron every day, we're told. Do you see what I'm getting at, Jack? Is there something about, trust me, I am the leader, we can't figure out a response to all these problems that we can articulate, so let's go with the visage of power and authority?
No, I take that point. I think that's going to be one of President Bush's strongest cards in this election. He's going to say, I think, in effect, you may not agree with everything I've done. You may think I did this wrong or that wrong, but I'm a strong leader. Now, he won't necessarily connect that with any particular policy. He may, but I think that we had David Frum on our program who mm-hmm. talked about how when he was writing a speech for Bush, he said, and here's the message, Mr. President, right? And he showed it to him, and Bush crossed it out, and he says, no, the message is Bush leads. And I think we're going to hear some of that. You know, leadership, apart from ideology, apart from particular programs, but leadership as sort of the opposite of parsing what is, mm. and leadership as decisiveness. And also that plays sort of psychoanalytically into the Republican Party's strong suit, which is, you know, in Chris Matthews' terms, they're the daddy party, the party of the superego, and the Democrats are the mummy party. And it's been running in the Republican direction, especially given the condition of what's been happening to unemployed men. I mean, are they going to want just a strong leader, or are they going to want someone who's going to give them health care and try to do something about their jobs?
It gets way down to the psychology. Adrian Wooldridge, you've got a new book coming out on what you call the right nation, that is the conservative nation. How do you see this leadership question figuring into your sense of the Republican Party at large and its success, Arnold's success?
Well, I think a lot of Arnold's success was not so much just a vote for his leadership qualities as a vote against a particular system of power that had been operating in Sacramento for a very long time.
Now, that's easy to say, but do you really? I mean, he's a superstar. He's got a movie, Terminator 3, in the cinemas while the vote's going on. Can people help but be voting for that image of the man?
I think that was powerful to them, but even more powerful was a really strong sense that the system in Sacramento is broken and what you need is an outsider coming in to fix that system. They knew that Gray Davis, it wasn't just that his personality was so pallid and appalling, but that he was part of a system of pay-to-play politics, of insiders making deals. So they wanted an outsider to come in.
So you're seconding Bill Schneider on that, someone to come in and kick the walls down a little bit. Gerald's calling from
LaCrosse.
We got it. Gerald's calling from LaCrosse, Wisconsin. Hi, Gerald. You're on the air.
Hi. You know, I don't even know where to start anymore after listening to all this conversation. But, you know, only in the movies does somebody with no experience and no abilities or capabilities in politics come in and do anything well. If there were solutions to California's problems, don't you think the Democratic Party would have figured out what they were and at least tried them? Second point is, I live right next door to Minnesota, and all kinds of people were willing to tell me the day after the election when Jesse Ventura won how they had voted for him and how that was so great. 4 years later, I couldn't find anybody who didn't roll their eyes when you mentioned Jesse Ventura. Just because you don't have any ability doesn't mean suddenly you're going to find the ability. I think 4 years from now or 2 years from now, whenever Schwarzenegger's term is up, people are going to look at themselves and say, who in the world thought this was a good idea?
What does the memory of Ronald Reagan say to you about that observation, Gerald?
Ronald Reagan at least had some leadership experience in the Screen Actors Guild and so forth. Mm-hmm. He wasn't without some leadership skills. Where does Arnold Schwarzenegger have any experience in leading anything?
Well, he's got a couple of small credits to his name around child care and, of course, the Special Olympics. But it's true they're not on the scale of leading a state of that size or anything like it. But let me turn to our guest and thank for your call. Thanks for your call, Gerald. Bill Schneider, what about this observation of Gerald's that if there was a solution to California's problems, the Democrats would have found it?
They found it, and it worked for the 10 years of the 1990s, and that's why California became such a solidly Democratic state. You know what the solution was? I'll give you a clue. A boom. California has a very progressive tax structure. Mm-hmm. They depend very heavily on the income tax, which is a very progressive income tax, so that rich people pay a lot of money. What happened after the year 2000 was the economy collapsed, particularly the high-tech economy, and there were fewer rich people, and the rich people who are here were not particularly as rich as they used to be. So tax revenues fell off very, very sharply. But when times were good in the 1990s, the Democrats really prospered. And the answer to California's problems, there's no secret about this. They have to return to an economic boom. But nobody knows how to make that happen, not in California, not even in the White House, because nobody's commander-in-chief of the economy.
And you can't snap your fingers and make it happen. It doesn't necessarily happen on any politician's timetable. If it doesn't come out, if it doesn't suddenly appear in, 6 months or 18 months, is there any way that Arnold can pull a success out of this?
Well, the state needs more rich people. That's basically the solution to its problems. That's the way its tax structure works. So the way he's planning to do it is somehow entice business to come back to California and create wealth. That sounds pretty good if he can do it.
Yeah, if he can do it. Adrian Wooldridge, a final thought from you. This big tent, you see it happening?
Everything depends on how successful Arnold is, and I'm not as pessimistic as perhaps Bill Schneider is. I think that the economy is beginning to turn around. I think the fact that Arnold isn't Gray Davis will make everybody a little bit happier for a while. I think the fact that he's not part of the insider system in Sacramento gives him a certain leverage over the system. So I think the man and the times might actually be right for a feeling at least that things are on the mend in California, certainly not going as badly wrong as they were in the last few years.
Well, the whole world of moviegoers and certainly Californians and Americans will watch once again Arnold Schwarzenegger in Rapt Fascination. Adrian Wooldridge, thank you for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Adrian Wooldridge covered the California recall for The Economist magazine. And Bill Schneider, just great having you on. Thanks so much for joining us.
And I want to congratulate you for having an entire talk show about Arnold Schwarzenegger without an extended discussion of sexual misconduct or groping.
My friend, that was last night.
We did groping wall to wall.
We've been there. Bill Schneider, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, Jack, there's the man, Governor-elect Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, golly, can you imagine a few years ago? It's still a little mind-blowing to me, I have to say. I'm not in California, so I can't feel it like they do. But the muscle man, he's in charge.
It's hard to get used to, isn't it? I suppose if you think of him as a sort of moderate Republican, Richard Reardon with muscles, doesn't sound so bad, except Richard Reardon had run the biggest city in the country for 8 years. This guy, as Gerald said, has no experience. And the magical element in this that Gerald brought out is so true. Well, magic is going to make all these problems go away.
Well, he's something else. Jack, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
In a moment, a new White House effort to defend the war in Iraq. This is On Point. When Chief U.S. Weapons Inspector David Kaye reported to Congress last week, politicians on both sides of the aisle were miffed that 3 months of searching for Saddam's weapons of mass destruction had essentially come up empty. But today, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice had a different interpretation of Kaye's weapons report. She told a foreign policy forum in Chicago that Kaye is, quote, finding proof that Iraq never disarmed and never complied with U.N. inspectors. Rice's speech was just part of a White House PR offensive on Iraq that officials say will include speeches by President Bush and Vice President Cheney, as well as high-profile trips to Iraq by cabinet secretaries to illustrate areas of progress. Here is more of today's speech by Condoleezza Rice.
Let me read you a passage from the progress report that David Kaye, head of the Iraq Survey Group, submitted to Congress last week. We have discovered dozens of WMD-related program activities and significant amounts of equipment that Iraq concealed from the United Nations during the inspections that began in late 2002. The discovery of these deliberate concealment efforts have come about both through the admissions of Iraqi scientists and officials concerning information they deliberately withheld, and through physical evidence of equipment and activities that the ISG, the Iraq Survey Group, has discovered that should have been declared to the United Nations. The Iraq Survey Group has confirmed many activities that we already knew about, including Iraq's massive deception campaign to conceal its efforts and its maintenance of prohibited delivery systems. The ISG has also uncovered some information that appears to corroborate reports that Iraq might have tested chemical and biological substances on human beings. And the ISG continues to find evidence of activities that the United States did not know about before the war. For example, they have found, and I quote, new research on BW biological weapons applicable agents, Brucella, and Congo-Crimean hemorrhagic fever. Clandestine attempts between late 1999 and 2002 to obtain from North Korea technology related to 1,300-kilometer range missiles. Research on a possible VX stabilizer, research and development for chemical weapons-capable munitions, and procurement and concealment of dual-use materials and equipment. These are only the highlights of a statement that runs more than 6,000 words. Iraq was required to declare all of these activities to the United Nations, but instead, it deliberately concealed them and deceived the inspectors. Had any one of these examples been discovered last winter, the Security Council would have had to meet, and I believe that they would have had no choice but to take exactly the course that President Bush followed, to declare Saddam Hussein in defiance of Resolution 1441 and enforce serious consequences.
National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice speaking earlier today before the Chicago Council on Foreign Relations. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.